All right, are we ready?
It's Roger.
Are we ready? Are we ready to? Are we ready to? Oh, we're not ready. No, we're not ready. We're absolutely not ready.
Yeah, we definitely don't sound ready.
Jesus Christ, we're not ready at all.
You build up for something.
I was expecting like a tab to be there, and it just fucking wasn't. So we're definitely not ready. Like what? No. Yeah. No. We're not. Are we gonna even do this?
We're not ready.
Your mission, should you decide to accept it.
And we're back.
And we're back. Victoria.
And we're... Yeah. So, this was your pick, Toma, right?
This is my pick.
For me, this is a very Jenny Toma album. Like, right. I feel like I knew the Kinks well, and you turned me on to this a while back. And it has forever been, like, a very Jenny Toma album. So I'm glad we're covering this. I'm glad you brought it to the party.
I want to point this out, that this one has been on my short list since we started this pod, two, three years ago now. And I know I can recall at least one or two instances where I, like, threatened. I was like, yeah, we're gonna do Arthur sometime. And it just, for whatever reason, never felt like the right time. And last time, something told me it's time for Arthur. And it's not because I was out of other stuff. There were definitely other things I wanted to get to, but the universe said it was time for Arthur. And I'm not saying that I unintentionally foreshadowed the Queen's death or anything, but well, I am saying that the themes in this album,
dude,
the
I did
themes
bring,
in this album are I, now more relevant than they were to me.
Yeah.
All I'm saying.
I did want to bring that up. It was a little bit weird that the Queen died, and I'm listening to this record talking about Victoria, my Queen.
Yeah,
it was British Empire.
Well, also, one of these songs actually does name check the Mountbattens. Like, literally talks about the Mountbattens, which is them. So
it's just so interesting because I've been listening to this record and it's definitely ambivalent about. It's ambivalent at best, it seems to me, about the British Empire.
For sure. Listen, it's called "Or the Decline and Fall of the British Empire."
Right.
It's just, more timely album to be talking about right after the Queen died?
Ambivalent is putting it lightly for sure.
It starts off with this song, which is, you could say it's like sarcastic or something, but I don't think so. It's celebrating Britain in some kind of way.
Let me give you the little backstory, right? Here's the backstory.
Yeah.
Ray Davies at some point was approached by some broadcasting company, and he said which one, but I forget. This is from an interview that I was watching. And they said, hey, we would like for you to write basically like a rock opera, it was meant to be for like a TV show that was supposed to air. And he was like, how much does it pay? And they're like, nothing at all. And he's great, I'll do it. And so that's what he was writing. It was like meant to accompany a TV show. And as best as I can tell, as I've read things here and there and tried to piece them together a little bit, it seems like it was loosely meant to like center around this Arthur character, which is like the title of the album. And it was based loosely on his brother-in-law, Arthur Morgan, who I think if I have my lore, it's been a while since I read this stuff. If my lore is right, I think that Arthur and Ray Davies' sister moved to Australia at some point, maybe. And that's like why you have all these themes of there's British themes, but there's also like Australia themes and things like that. So you might need to fact check me on some of that, but that's my loose recollection. And so it's like following this dude loosely based on him and like his life experiences. But it's also, I think, like just a statement about like society, which Ray Davies was always very happy to do. It's one of his favorite themes.
So it starts off with Victoria, which is, I think, a pretty, and again, we don't have to say that this is Ray or any of the members of the Kinks, but like the character Arthur celebrating rural Britannia, whatever. And then it sounds like the second song is like about him serving in the military.
Yeah, it's almost, and I'm sorry the quality of this has changed, but my headphones were dying. But yeah, so like the first, it's like a child's vision of like military. It's like a very like bright and like patriotic and happy and I'll serve. And then it's yes sir, no sir, almost feels like boot camp. Like it feels like those first few weeks, a stereotypical few weeks of boot camp where he's just getting it stomped into him. And at the end of it, he's questioning his decision and then right. off to war. And then I always feel like some mother's son and driving are like
polar
the reality
opposite.
And the propaganda. Yeah.
I thought about those as the same wartime experience as told by people who had to serve and people who didn't. That's what it
yeah,
seemed like
100%.
To me.
Yeah. I mean, because like, it's so bright, and there's the point where they're like, was it like the Russians and the Chinese and the Spanish do the fight? Because we'll be driving. Like,
right.
And, like, in my cut of this thing, tried to focus on that, like, dark beetle. Like, it's satire of the Empire and, like, satire of the output of the, like, military might of the Empire, right? Like, the effect of that on the common man. Because, like, after driving is brainwashed, which is a little on the nose for the theme, but is a lot of fun. It's still a really good track. Australia is just that, like, disconnectedness of escaping into another colony.
What?
Right? Like, this whole thing's a really good, like, I'd like to see this as a play. Forget the television show. I'd really, this should be a play. Like, in a just universe, this would be,
listen,
like, touring, a touring Broadway play.
Here's the thing. As Chris asked me, he was like, can we watch the, and I said, I don't think the show ever got made, as far as I'm aware. But, Alonzo, you can bring it to life. You're into that shit. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, make this.
Yeah.
I live in New Mexico, and I think I could probably do Australia.
It could pass for Australia. Just find yourself a Joey. You'll be good.
Yeah. So I do want to comment on this song, Some Other Son, because I put it in my cut. You guys didn't. I just thought it was a really beautiful kind of... just a really beautiful, mellow sort of meditation on, like, young people dying.
I agree with you. It's incredibly powerful. It's a huge downer.
It is a huge downer, but it's funny because I think it works in contrast with Yes or No Sir. To me, this is like the first battle where all your... So like, Victoria is, we're going off to war, ha, fun. Yes or No Sir is boot camp. It's still, hey, this is what it is. And then this song is the aftermath of the first, like, action where you're seeing people die all around you, right?
Yeah.
Like that, like, to me is, it works in contrast to what's around it. Especially driving, which is like a little bit more fuck the world nihilistic. Like, all these other people doing these other things, I'm just gonna go drive.
And also, I've gotta assume, given like the time frame, that we've gotta be talking about like a World War II like scenario. I think so.
It feels like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think that it's been a really long time. Alright, listen. As anti-military as I ordinarily am, even I can understand the patriotism behind, like, we have to unite to defeat, like, Nazis. Like, I get that. But I feel like since then, most of our wars have not been that. Possibly none of them. Like, there hasn't been a cause like that you can actually, well, that I, some people can, but that I could even feel patriotic about. But I can at least understand how, when you're talking about, like, fighting Nazis, I guess I can give them a little slack and be like, yeah, I guess that was, like, a we need to unite the thing, patriotism, I get it. I'll give them that. I'll put them some slack on that.
It's interesting because it's, like, maybe it's World War II, maybe it's World War I. And the reason I say that is because it feels like... So this is very similar to, I don't know, have you ever seen that movie Gallipoli? It's actually about Australian soldiers fighting in World War I against the Ottoman Turks, but it has a very similar kind of naivete about going to war and boot camp and it's fun. And then they go to the first sort of trench battle. And the thing about World War I was, it was far more capricious in how many people died for what reason and to what end. So in other words, right, these battles were millions of casualties, some of these battles, where they would take a handful of square kilometers of land in the battle and consider that a victory, right? You just had scores of people dying in these trenches, charging at Gatling guns, machine guns, and just getting slaughtered for basically no reason. So I'm like, it almost feels like, I'm not saying that World War II was better or anything like that. I'm just saying that I think people had gone through the First World War and knew how, what it really actually meant to fight like that again. At least the British, for sure. Millions of people died in, millions of British people died in World War I. Anyway, not to be such a bummer. I love this song too. This song is like so pretty. And it has a really nice little key change too at the end, which is cool. And I really dig it. And I think, oh yeah, Jenny, it's okay. Well, I'm curious, why didn't it make your cut?
It actually was at the bottom, and then I was like, maybe I was doing it because, you know, I always do my cuts by like numeric ranking.
Yeah, and
that one was like close, and I guess I could have left it there, but then I was like, I don't know. It was like at the very bottom. It could have gone either way, honestly. Huh. It really could have. I like it. It's a perfectly good song.
Is it that it's like a little slight?
I think it's more that like when I'm like seriously making a cut of this album, that even though this is a perfectly good song that I enjoy listening to, for whatever reason, it wouldn't probably make my cut ordinarily. So I think that's probably why I hedge towards leaving it off. And it's not because it's not a good song, but it's just because there's so many other like absolute masterpieces that I feel like maybe by contrast, it gets a bad shake, an unfair shake.
I also think on a personal level, I really do love the super easy to sing big choruses.
Right? Yeah.
That's just always like fun. Like just in the context of like sometimes like I'll listen to some of these songs we do and I'll listen to them in the context of, hey, could I sing this in karaoke or something?
Yeah, oh absolutely. Like Waterloo Sunset is like the most singable thing imaginable. We do it all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
This is like a banger potential karaoke song for sure. I love that little guitar line too. And actually, I don't know, this is a question maybe for Ryan too. Like the sound of this record, it's really interesting.
Yeah, I was listening, like, it definitely benefits from a good stereo system because there's a lot of layers that are happening, I feel like.
And, oh, there are.
Like, it's really, like, the rhythm guitar is really interesting in a lot of places. The, like, counter melodies that they seem to find, I don't know.
So, it's their first, is it their first record in stereo? Is that right?
I don't know about that. I'll have to look at that.
I think also, I'm not like super familiar with the Kinks. Like, I'm not like a super fan or anything like that. But like the Kinks that I think most people know, like the You Really Got Me Kinks.
Or Lola.
Well,
yeah,
I would say like the old Kinks, You Really Got Me stuff. It's like kind of classic mono. It's simple. There's not a ton going on, but that's what's cool about it. It has an attitude and it's not got a lot going on. And this is definitely not that. And not to say it doesn't have attitude. It's just arranged to a T. But not in a bad way. Like, in a really pleasant, cool way.
There's the way that they work in horns to this, and it's almost, like, seamless to which, like, I have to stop and think about, oh, these are horns in here. When I'm listening, I don't even think about it that much. Like, it just blends. And back to Lewis's point for a hot second, like, one really good example of that is that I have been listening or actively or passively to this album since I was like old enough to hear sounds and make sense of them. But it was not until I was listening to it again for the episode on headphones, probably for the first time actually, that I realized that Mr. Churchill Says actually has, and there's a better way to describe it, but I don't know what it is, a technical term. So I'm just going to say it has Mac DeMarco guitars, which I never have heard that in there before. I've never heard it. When my dad was playing records, or when like I'm playing it on big speakers, I never registered that. But headphones, I was like, holy shit, they're in there.
You probably are listening to, because I think they put out like a remixed version, right?
Yeah.
Not too long ago.
Yeah, they're, like in 2018 was the 50th anniversary, so they put out a 2-disc remix that has, I guess, like a lot of Dave Davies tracks on it. And then a 5-disc set or a 4-disc set of it, which crazy, like, it's crazy to think that this got like a 4- and 5-disc treatment 50 years after it came out, just in terms of no one ever talks about this Kinks album, but fantastic.
I feel like music nerds know this record, and they know
Village Green Preservation Society.
They know that. Yeah. I feel like music nerds know this one, but I feel like Americans do not have any idea about these.
Yeah, Village Green, I think Americans
actually. Arthur was bigger, I think, in the U.S. at the time than it was in England. I think that there's a subset of Americans of a certain age, i.e. my dad, who are familiar with Arthur, but I think that it has faded out of everything else, give or take. But I will say real quick, back to your comment earlier, Lewis, about this album being like a me thing. My playlist reflects, I'm obviously not going to show really got me, like you're getting deep cuts only on that. But if you guys are interested, my top three Kinks albums that I would probably recommend are obviously this one. Village Green is actually pretty good, but also this one, Something Else, very good. Those three are all excellent. And I actually have one or two tracks from their 80s sound that we're gonna watch if there's time, that you can see what they turned into. Cool. That's what I think is really interesting about the Kinks, is that they have a longevity. Do you know, Ray Davis is still recording, I'm pretty sure. I have seen the Kinks were the first concert I ever remember seeing. I can remember, I have memories of being at the Mann Center in Philly in 1989 for their UK Jive tour. Like, they all had tuxedos on and were like doing little dances. It's hard for a band to hold my interest for this many decades through different musical styles. There are some bands I love, like Deer Hunter, love you. Sometimes they like veer off into stuff and I'm just like, okay, this era is not for me.
Yeah.
The Kinks actually stayed relevant. I know that people aren't, besides me, aren't familiar with what they were doing in the 80s and 90s, but like, they were still putting out some bangers, in my humble opinion. That's really remarkable for somebody to be able to do that so long and through different styles. I mean,
if you look, like, they put out their first album in 64 and their last studio album in 93. That's pretty damn good.
I think that Ray is still doing solo stuff. I know he did an album when he was living in New Orleans, and I think he's still doing solo stuff, but Dave has passed, RIP, I'm pretty sure.
Got it.
Yeah, he had a stroke a few years ago. I think that's right. I mean, he passed. I can't remember what year.
Just a real quick annoying fact check here. So the three singles from this album, in order, are Drivin', which did not chart at all, UK, US, or NL? Is that Netherlands?
Maybe. Interesting.
I didn't know that was like a market that people cared about, I guess. Shangri-La did not chart UK, US, or what I'm assuming is the Netherlands. And then Victoria hit 30 in the UK, hit 62 in the US, and did not chart in the Netherlands.
Like, yeah. It's a little shocking that Victoria didn't chart a little higher in the U.S. Like, it's a really catchy track, for sure. However, like, it's bonkers that they put out Driving as the opening single. Like, that seems like whatever record executive was putting this out was completely tone deaf to that song.
Dude, that's a banger.
It's not that it's not a banger, but, like, in terms of pop music, it's very subversive. It's a subversive banger. Like, the things that it's saying in the song are incredibly subversive to the general attitude of, like, the Western world in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah. It's interesting to see, because I think Tired of Waiting for You is, it seems like their biggest hit.
Wait, You Really Got Me is not a bigger
hit. You Really Got Me across the board is like one peg lower, it seems.
Interesting.
Tired of Waiting for You, it seems like it was sixth on Billboard, fifth in the world, fifth in Cashbox, whatever the hell that means. And then coming right after that would be Lola.
I feel like the Kinks for me, at least like in the like 80s and 90s listening to the radio, Kinks were one of those bands that it always surprised you that it was a Kinks song. Like, you'd hear, for those of us who didn't have people like parents listening to the Kinks, you'd hear a song and recognize it and enjoy it. And then, that's the Kinks.
By the way, I just want to throw this out there because I've thought it and it made me chuckle, but like one day we should have a dad's recommendations episode where like our dads get to recommend what we listen to.
Damn, dude.
Okay, so
my dad, and this is serious, my dad actually sent me an email not too long ago and he was like, have you, and it was titled Your Podcast, and he was like, have you considered doing Lucinda Williams' Car Wheels on a Gravel Road? I was like, do you know that album?
That's
and
a
I
banger.
Said, Dad, I said, Dad, I, of course I recall that album. You played it nonstop for a whole year while I lived at home. I cannot forget that album.
Dude,
it is in green, like right here.
That's a classic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would totally fucking do that. I was actually thinking about this over the week because I was listening to the record and I was thinking about it and I was like, I know that this is one of those records that Jenny's dad introduced to her, for sure. And then I was thinking about all of us, and I think all of us have pretty good relationships with our dads, or at least had good relationships with our dads, like growing up, I would say. And so that kind of informs like our ability to like consider, tolerate, even embrace like music from that time. Because I know a lot of people that have terrible relationships with their parents, and they could not give a fuck less about that, the music from their parents' time. And it's definitely not the case for me. I added, like, Donovan was one of my dad's, like, favorite.
Oh, man.
Like, he was a big Donovan fan. For whatever reason, I think Donovan was a big deal in Peru. not so much in the States. But I added a Donovan song, and that's one of my dad's, like,
my dad had
groups.
A Donovan record in there. I definitely recall there being maybe just the one, but he did have one.
So my dad had Sunshine Superman on tape, and then he had a Greatest Hits also on tape we would listen to in the car.
Lewis, what is your dad's position on Donovan? We need to know.
Oh, no.
I don't think that's ever come up. Though, the thing to remember is my dad, like, in high school, played in, like, a folk rock group. Like,
he
was in Petersburg.
So maybe he fucked with some Donovan. I bet he did.
I think he probably fucked with some Donovan. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something that, like, gets buried in my dad's past, is that, like, before he had his motorcycle wreck, he was, like, actively playing music in the Petersburg, West Virginia area.
Interesting. Yeah. Is there footage of that?
No, there's not that I'm aware of. Maybe somewhere buried in, like, my grandparents' stuff.
Or tapes? Like, recording.
I mean, if anyone would have recorded that stuff, it would have been Wayne Lewis. I'm just not sure he had access at,
like,
that point.
Just,
because they would have been running the, like, butcher shop.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he had expendable income.
You know what, Ryan? If somehow we do find that, maybe we could put together, like, a compilation of, like, underground West Virginia folk.
Yeah.
Like. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Sly.
That would be so amazing.
We'll do like a fair convention episode so we can fit that in the after party.
Yeah. It would be cool to dig into some of that older stuff. I just don't know where any of my... I know my grandparents had a ton of, at least, like, photo albums. Like, I remember watching, like, grandfather do, like, slides. He would bring out, like, a slide projector from, like, a vacation and show slides.
Oh, nice. I bet those are somewhere, right? Someone has those.
They have to be somewhere. I just have to figure out where.
Yeah. Neither of my parents played music when I was growing up. My dad has referred to himself over and again as a musical idiot. But he'd like listening to music. I think my dad also has some kind of apocryphal story of him, like, trying to learn to play guitar and the guitar teacher just being like, you're hopeless, like, this is not gonna happen. I don't know, I'm sure he's exaggerating, but
might not be his instrument, because I struggle to play guitar, not because I'm not good at music, because, like, my hands just, like, struggle to do that. It's hard, so I stick with piano because I can do it, you know?
Well, it's interesting because one of the great regrets, the only knowledge I have about music was of my own desire and volition. Like, my parents never ever was like, hey, you should maybe take some piano lessons or whatever. Or we never really had, like, instruments in the house or anything like that. Like, we had a stereo. So it was like it was me, and it was motivated by two things, like meeting girls and being out of school. Getting to go on, like, field trips and getting not to be in school. So I think probably more than anything, there was some love and, like, some desire to understand music better. But Yeah, that was like my, that was my kind of, I think, Ryan, you always had your dad who, like, I think, always encouraged you to play guitar and stuff like that.
Yeah, dad let me be encouraged, but like, my grandmother, every time we were in that house, there was jazz music on the radio. I remember seeing like my parents, like 8-tracks when I was really young. They didn't have a record player, they had an 8-track player.
Yeah.
Yeah, music's always been a part of the house. And I had dad's 12-string acoustic. I gave it to Aubrey's dad. He has some, it's more decoration now, but it's a very old instrument and was failing in a way that wasn't worth repairing.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was always music and it was always encouraged to play something.
We'd listen to music all the time. And it's the more I reflect on the music we listened to back in the day, like, my parents' favorite music, and my dad's favorite music specifically, is basically soft rock of the 70s and the late 60s, I would say. That's what they were into. And like my dad, he never really liked any kind of loud-ass, distorted-ass guitar or any of that stuff. And really, I only discovered that later on my own. So I think my dad's probably favorite musician is probably Cat Stevens. If I had to go through and think of all the different things he played, probably Cat Stevens. And I would totally be down to do a Cat Stevens record. I don't listen to him a ton these days, but I'd be interested to even see what it sounds like. I don't know, Jenny, does that at all line up with what your dad was into? Some.
No. I don't think he had anything against Cat Stevens. I just think that it, like, was like more adjacent to the stuff he was real interested in. He had no qualms. I feel like he would have no qualms with it, but it, like, also wasn't something he spent a lot of time with either.
Yeah. Paul Simon, too. My dad was super into Paul Simon. Like, anything Paul Simon.
Oh, yeah. My dad has a gazillion Simon & Garfunkel records. Yeah. And he also has, like, their solo stuff. And
Yeah. My dad is a huge Paul Simon fan. And so, it's just so interesting because, like, I think part of it is just growing up in Peru, like, just the loud-ass rock and roll, it didn't really do much there. Like, I don't think people's ears are really all that prepared for that kind of stuff, if that makes sense. But I feel
the pan flutes didn't prepare you for distortion.
But beyond the pan flutes, like the cumbia or any of the any of that stuff, it doesn't really align at all with any of that kind of stuff. But
speaking
like,
of which,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, but at least with Tim Lewis, like he was really into some of the hard rocks in a way that was cool, and I didn't like it was like one of those things where I didn't. I feel like there's a lot of stuff I listened to for the first time in your dad's truck.
Yeah, he had all sides. Like, I remember him having a Boys to Men tape in that truck. I remember one of the first, like, 8-tracks that I found of theirs, at least when he and Mom were married, was Wham. A lot of George Michael that got played.
Yeah, man, George Michael, let's not shit on George Michael.
I don't know, this is not shitting on. I'm just saying, there was a spectrum that, like, I encompass as well. And it went from, like, Black Sabbath, Master of Reality, and, like, Dehumanizer, Dio Black Sabbath.
Dio Black Sabbath, yeah.
To Wham! Right? That's a big gap.
It's so funny. Either I don't remember, or he didn't play that shit around me. I don't know. Maybe for your, like, teenage, like, son and his, like, friend, like, you're not gonna play, like, Boys to Men.
Yeah, if you guys listen to this album by Wham!
Yeah. And really, in 1993, 4, 5, or whatever, like, Wham! Could not have been more whack. Like, like people have come back around.
Yeah, like, you know, my dad, he always had the tapes in the truck, and it was, like, Black Sabbath and Pink Floyd, and, yeah, it ran the spectrum.
So, Jenny, I'm curious, like, when you were listening to this stuff, were you listening to it in the car? Were you listening to it on vinyl at the house? On tape at the house? What was the mode?
Do you mean for this?
Like for Arthur, for example, or for other stuff your dad was into?
You mean how was my dad playing stuff?
Yeah, yeah. How did you listen to this? Because like
he has
go ahead.
A massive record collection. It's huge. And so some of it was like just actually on a record player. Some of it was he migrated a lot of it over to tapes after a while. These days he's got MP3s, but he also still has all his tapes and records too. He's really just got every mode down there.
Okay, so when you were growing up in your house, you listened to this record mostly on vinyl, on the record player.
Or tape.
Oh, he had the tape too.
But, I mean, he had records and tapes, but he played them all through the same stereo system. He had two really big speakers.
Got it, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so how much did you guys listen to music in the car?
A lot, all the time.
Okay, yeah.
We were always listening to something, Alonzo, just never not listening to stuff.
Yeah.
We would wake up. I've told you how he woke up stuff for school, right? Is that he would just put a record on and turn it. The volume knob went all the way up. And from time to time, it was like Pink Floyd's Adam Hart Mother, which is like, it will wake you up. I'm telling you, it will. And that's how we woke up. Or it was NPR. Or and then when we were driving in the car, they had a gazillion tapes that they wore out that they were listening to in the car. Like,
yeah.
He used to have a tape of Gorky's I Got a Monkey that I listened to.
Right,
that's where,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Just
no, that,
always.
I feel like the more we listen to music more in the car than at the house. Because like when we were at the house, like if we were going to listen to something, it was probably we were going to watch TV or watch a movie or something like that.
Actually, it was almost a reward in our house. It actually was. The rule in our house, like unofficially, was if you were doing some cleaning of some type or some like necessary housework, you got to pick what got played. Like you got control of the stereo. And so sometimes it was like, all right, I'm going to do dishes because like I want to listen to this right now.
That's a good system.
Yeah, that's a great system.
In a household full of six people, yeah, it absolutely was. Yeah.
Just by the way that my parents would wake me up in the morning was, yeah, they didn't play music. I just sleep right through that shit. They would actually, it's cruel now that I think about it. They would just rip all the sheets and the duvet and the blank, whatever. They just rip it all off me. Just, that was, without, like, warning, just, they just rip everything off. That was, like, really the only way that I was going to get out of bed. Mean, honestly.
That is mean.
I don't do that with my kids. I really don't.
You've broken the cycle.
I think so. I don't know, Ryan, your dad or mom or whoever wake you up with, like, what, like, how did they wake you up?
Mom was just persistent, and dad, the tone changed. Like, quickly changed from hey, get out, like it's time to get up to hey, I don't have any fucking time for this.
Right.
Is exactly what my mom did, and it was not effective at all.
Yeah,
and my dad was like, I see that you have failed with that. I'm not doing that. I'm just gonna find the strangest music I have, and it will be at like bed shaking volumes. And you know what? It worked better.
Yeah. I love it. If we ever have kids, maybe I'll install some speakers in the house. That way I can strategically place it where it needs to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just how they would torture prisoners in Abu Ghraib with the loud music. Seems like a good child rearing strategy.
Absolutely.
They didn't do it because it wasn't effective.
Anyway. Alonzo, I have to ask, what was the kids' rating of this? How the kids feel about this?
Yeah, kids didn't really... They didn't really say much. I don't think they were displeased.
Didn't love it, didn't hate it. They were
just
fine with it.
Yeah, they were just fine with it. It's really funny because like sometimes when I play music for the kids, they ask me to change it to the King Giz record. They really love that one, dude. That one won for them.
I was thinking about that earlier today because I was putting together my playlist and it's just like, I felt like if they weren't into it, that you should just be like, okay, but what if I told you and then showed them the video to Animal Farm? I feel like if anything has a shot at getting them into Kinks, it's that one.
Yeah.
Animal Farm is amazing. I love that song.
So I've been playing. I played this a couple times when I took them to school. They dug it, but it wasn't like any. I don't think it wasn't vocal.
It's no King Giz.
No King Giz. But also now Joe has made several playlists.
Oh.
So sometimes we'll listen to Joe's playlists, and then sometimes we'll listen to a pretty diverse playlist that I've created. So like I've basically made a playlist of songs that someday I want to use in movies if I can ever do that. And so like sometimes music from this time frame will make it in there for sure. There is a song by what the hell is the name of that guy? Do you remember that song Baker Street?
Yeah, Jerry Rafferty.
Jerry Rafferty. So,
dude, that song is a banger.
That song is a banger. The song I have on my playlist is Right Down the Line. Do you know that song? We might have to fuck
it. Sorry. I thought you were talking about a Kinks song called Get Back in Line. You were talking about something else. I do not know what that is.
Talk about Jerry Rafferty. But Frankie really likes that song, which leads me to believe that if I put some other soft rock stuff on there, he might dig it. But yeah. So yeah, I would say a 5, maybe a 6. Because like when they don't like it, they let me know. Like when they don't like it, like when we played, we did Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, and some of the harder songs on there, they were just like, Dad, please change this.
Really? Like Melancholy, of all the things we've listened to, well, that's what they were like, I guess.
Well, no, they hated Iron Maiden, and they hated just the harder songs, the harder ones. Like,
yeah.
What's the song? Ode to No One? And stuff like that. Just the really super hard, Jelly Belly, the really harder ones on Melancholy, like... They just don't, they don't have the ears for it, dude. I don't know how else to explain it. Like, Katie doesn't
oh,
really
like... I think
like,
you have to...
Katie doesn't
like
metal.
You gotta be a teenager.
Katie doesn't like metal, so we never played it in the house. And if I play anything heavy in there, they just don't even know how to process it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that those receptors don't come in until teenagehood.
Huh. Yeah. It could be. Well, we're at Nothing to Say on the record. And, okay, I'm gonna float an opinion. Could be controversial or not, I don't know. I feel like I like the first half of this record. I like side A of this record twice as much as I like side B. But I might be alone there.
I think it's pretty evenly split for me.
Yeah,
I think that there's...
the same way. I think it's a pretty even split as well. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say that this album is like half... absolute masterpieces and half like what is like fine but at the end of the day like filler that I could lose without being too upset about.
Yeah, I don't love this song. It's cool.
Yeah, it's fine.
Cool. It's fine.
It's not something I would keep.
It's not something I would keep. She Bought a Hat Like Princess Marina, also something I would just,
nah.
Just kind of okay.
It's filler.
I don't know. I did like Young and Innocent Days because it had a little bit of a country feel to it, which made it a little bit different in my mind, distinguished it a little bit. It was a little bit like more mellow, which I, because a lot of these songs are like, are there like 2 songs on this record that are mellow?
Probably. I feel like Some Mother's Son is like very along this line.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think those 2 songs are like the only kind of 2 just straight.
And the very beginning of Shangri-La is very chill.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
I love Shangri-La because it's just, I feel like it like runs through like this whole cycle of like, you know, oh, like you've made it. Like not the American dream, but whatever the equivalent
the
of the American dream is.
The Australian
dream. Yeah, the Australian dream. And then it's just, and then it like shifts right into disillusionment. And I was like thinking how funny that is because I've just never had those thoughts. That's not something I identify with at all for 2 reasons. One, because I feel like to get disillusioned, you have to be illusioned to begin with, and I guess I just never was. Like, I just never aspired to be like, oh, like, house, car, like, stuff. In fact, for most of my adult life, I didn't own a house, and frankly, I spent so long in college, it was unclear if I ever would.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it was just so weird. I was like thinking a lot. I was like, oh, I guess that's probably true for a lot of people, but only if you buy into it in the first place.
Yeah, I think I can speak a little to it just because I've moved so many places in my life.
Yeah.
And I think, like, for me, I definitely feel like the disillusionment and moving somewhere and then getting disillusioned. But the thing is that I've never hated anywhere that I've been at the end of the day. Like, I've never ever been like, man, fuck that place. I don't have anything to do with it. That place sucks. There's always been, like, nice things or things to take away from each place I've been to. I'm in New Mexico now. It's a beautiful place. It's my home. It's the only place my kids know, which is crazy to think. But it's a lot of things going on here that are fucked. Like, plenty of things. Things that really bug me sometimes. And then, like, I was in New York at the end of August. Briefly, like 3 days, and it's like a whole different world, and if it was really cool. But then I remember living in New York, and living in New York and visiting New York are very different things.
Yeah, that's very true.
So it speaks to me on some level, and I think in general I'm a hopeful person, and that hope can be like shaken. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. But I also think about my parents coming to the States too, and I don't think they had any kind of illusions about it, like it was going to be Australia or Australia, like for Arthur. But Peru was like falling apart. So basically it was like, hey, there's this opportunity to go somewhere that's not completely falling apart. Of course, they went to New York in the 80s. It wasn't exactly had its shit together or anything like that. But I feel this story. I think it's cool that it ends on Arthur, which I think is an upbeat song, and it's a nice way to wrap it up.
Yeah, there's a little alt country to it, like even in 69.
I dig this. There's a couple of songs where you get that, and it's not like very, not super distorted guitars. The arrangements are interesting. The way the songs change and seem to have like movements. And I dig all that. Like, I wonder, did just this sort of thing get lost in the shuffle in 1969? Think about 1969. 69 is like the starting the ascendancy of like heavier music, heavier rock music. So I'm like thinking about, when did Zeppelin 4 come out?
I think that 71? Was 71?
Like... Yeah, 71. Oh. So Zeppelin 2. Okay, so Zeppelin 2 is out in 69. And so that's Whole Lot of Love. That's, when was the Sabbath's first record, right? Right at the beginning of 1970. So I wonder if part of the reason it didn't hit like at the time was just that like the rest of the rock world was moving in a different direction.
Yeah, that could be. And also, it was released in October 69, so it was late in the year. It's not like it was January or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess the Beatles, when did the Beatles break up? Like right around this time?
I'm not sure.
So Abbey Road, when did Abbey Road come out? Yeah, 1969, yeah. Is this about a moment of transition, it seems like, in like British music? But, right? The next record is when they had one of their biggest hits of all time, Lola. Wasn't Lola the next record after?
I don't think so.
Oh, I'm just talking shit.
I immediately was like, no, it was so much later. But then I was like, I don't know that for a fact. It was just a gut feeling. Let me go find out.
Lola. Okay. All right, I'm not talking shit. It was the next record.
Was it really?
It came out in 1970.
Which one was next?
Percy is the next record. Or Muswell Hill, but I guess they had two different releases, one in the UK, one in the US.
For some reason, I could totally be wrong about this, and I apparently am, but for some reason I thought that like this one and then Village Green Preservation... Hold on a second, we're all in an order. Let me see.
Yeah, so... It's really interesting. I don't know, it's just super interesting because it seemed like their popularity was like winding down a lot. And they were putting out stuff that was different and weirder and more ambitious. And I guess the other thing I think about is Tommy. Like, when did Tommy come out? Also 1969. So, and Tommy was like an ambitious like rock opera type thing, and, although a very different sound.
There are actually some dudes on the internet who claim that this is like so much better than Tommy, and I can't say that I've really watched Tommy, so I'm not in a position to say.
I'm just gonna say that I'm not a huge fan of The Who, and I don't know if I have to like pass in my like music criticism card or whatever, I don't know, but... I've just never been a big fan. I got a couple songs that are pretty cool, but I've never been a big...
No, I'm right there with you on that, because I think, like, when I hear The Who, I'm like, oh, that's cool. But, like, for whatever reason, I just never have gotten deep into them. I am, like... I believe that they're probably, like, the rest of their material is probably pretty good, too. It's just that I have never gone on that sort of exploration for whatever reason.
I did add kind of cool video of Pinball Wizard for our little playlist and whatever. But anyway, okay. Any rounding thoughts here? Any other observations or things to wrap up?
I feel like I could talk about like the Kinks and even this album for a long time, but I don't think we need to go there today. Other than, I just think that like the Kinks as a group, I think it's, I don't know, it makes me a little bit sad that what they're known for is You Really Got Me or So Tired of Waiting. And it's not that those songs aren't good, they are, but I think that like their whole catalog, like the deeper cuts, I feel like there's so much more depth that they have, and they've got so many gems that are buried through six, seven, eight, however many decades, eight decades now. that it's just like, when I like put on the Kinks, like I don't even go to that old stuff really. I'm going to like stuff slightly after that. I'm going to like stuff in the 80s. We were re-listening to Phobia today and Chris was like, Jesus Christ, was Ray Davis all right? And I was like, honestly, probably not, it sounds like, because like I never really thought about it when I was listening to Phobias as a younger kid. Like, either he was having a real like mentally unwell time, or he was writing about people that were. Like, right. there's so much in their catalog that's like worth spending some time with. It's all like interesting and different in its own way, and like Ray Davis is such a character that like he too is just interesting. So
yeah.
But this is one of the few that I would, if you're in that position of, I would like to know more about the Kinks than just Lola or just those things. You can never go wrong with this one. You can't go wrong with Something Else or Village Green or like even like State of Confusion era type stuff. It's all like interesting. It's all good.
Right.
And they're just a really good band. I feel like they've survived. I keep saying that as if they're all still together. They're not. But Ray Davis is still kicking. Like, that guy is like just still going, and it's amazing.
I mean, look, you start a rock band in the 60s and what are the chances of having the success they had?
Yeah.
So little.
Ryan and they're still arguably still relevant today, which is the reason why I've got those first two videos there.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, there's It's a good catalog. It's worth spending some time with.
Right on. Okay, Ryan.
And I do have a whole Kinks playlist on Spotify that y'all can peruse anytime you want. It's there.
Well,
I made
it. Put it in our Discord, and I'll share it with the listeners of the pod.
Cool deal.
Ryan, any rounding thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a great concept album. It's interesting that Toma, you were talking about it being his like brother-in-law. A lot of the themes feel very like World War One, World War Two. There were also like 9 other conflicts between World War Two and 1969 that the British were involved in, so who knows. But yeah, I don't know. It's a great concept album. It's got a lot of that like sarcastic poppiness that you get with good Kinks music, and yeah, really good. Like I said, I'd love to see a play of it, but there's no way in hell it would be successful. No, unless it was some like really like modern adaptation, which I could see doing, because I feel like the comments that it makes throughout the album are still pretty relevant. Maybe not specifically to Australia, but
I feel like Brainwashed applies just as much today as it does ever. So the more things change, the more things stay the same.
It might apply more.
Yeah,
I think too. I was thinking about this too today. Could, if an album like this came out today, would it get canceled? Like, so it's a character, so I can't celebrate, like, in Victoria celebrating, like, the British Empire, essentially. Because people are, these days, so, like, outrageously and critically incapable of reading media in any kind of way, would like a song like Victoria get marred, like basically excluded for celebrating British colonialism?
Maybe.
I don't know. It's just people are incapable of reading a song that a character says something in that they don't like. Like it's just really hard for people to separate that or understand that or compartmentalize that or read it in any kind of way. So I was just curious, like, maybe this record wouldn't fly because of stuff like that. And
yeah, it's possible.
And also another thought I had too was like, it was like about the Queen dying, right? Like I'm definitely in the F the Queen and all that camp, like about 1,000%, right? And also, like, why are we paying attention to these people that serve no purpose anymore that I can see? No kind
Listen,
of meaningful purpose.
The best thing to come out of the Queen's death were the memes. Like, the memes were fire. And nothing against her as a person. I'm sure she's fucking lovely and all that shit. Maybe didn't ask for this, but at the same time, because Anthony Bourdain, there is a clip of Anthony Bourdain that resurfaced around this time, and it was him sitting around at a table with some people, And one of them and just gets ready to take a drink and he does a toast and he's like, to the queen. And Bourdain is, no, I fucking hate the aristocracy, man. We can't, no. And I'm just like, yeah okay.
So two things around that too. Katie shared with me some tweet or some TikTok, with like Irish step dancers, like step dancing to Another One Bites the Dust in front of Buckingham Palace, which is really fucking hilarious. I'm not going to lie. And then also, I watched this movie in the last couple of months called RR. Have you guys ever heard of it? Or seen it? So it's not Bollywood. It's technically Tollywood, which is Telugu Indian cinema. But it's probably the most popular film from India ever at this point. It's actually streaming on Netflix. And it's about two Indian freedom fighters fighting against the British. But it's fictional. Like, they're real people, but what they do in the movie is completely fictional. And it's, like, the most inventive action, almost bordering on superhero, like, movie I've ever seen. I was really blown away by it and just enjoyed it so much. And it's 3 hours of Indian people making fun of the British and making them look like horrible, evil dummies. And it's wonderful. And I'm never going to get tired of that.
Yeah, that's great. So I'm sure there are individually some lovely British people, but like collectively, they deserve those memes.
If that's all they get, they built their country's wealth off the backs of the world and stole and pillaged and all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, I feel pretty strongly about all that time. At the same time, this is like a story and it's about a character. It's obviously about a common British person. And like the experience of the common British person is going to be very different than that of the queen and the colonial, the people that engaged, participate in colonialism and all that stuff. So anyway, just some random thoughts there. Any ratings? I'm happy to start if that's okay. I never really listened to this record, I think, at all. And it's cool. It's really cool. What I respect about it is the way that some of these songs are so, like, there's so much to them. They're not, like, these disposable pop songs. And frankly, like, the Kinks to me were creators of some really fun but pretty disposable pop songs. And so this kind of flew right into the face of that, which was really cool to hear. And the songs are really... there's not a bad song on here. There's not a song where I'm just like, man, fuck this shit. And there's something to be said for that. I think I like Side a lot more than like Side, but like I mentioned before. There's some songs that I'm gonna try and find, like the indie, like I'm gonna try and find the karaoke version of on YouTube just to add it into the mix because I love the choruses and I think it would be fun to sing. So, 4 stars for me.
I'm laughing because I, like, earlier today was like, what would I give this if I were, like, going off just, like, my gut? What does my heart say this ranking is? Yeah. And I was like, there, if you could really split this album in about half, and you could have a masterpiece and also just, like, filler, I think that there's, like, a pretty clear dividing line. And so, where, like, I, like, oh, like, some of the best stuff, like, just some of the most amazing stuff is on this album. It also does have filler, so I'd say I'd have to give it a 4. And then I did the actual math. Like, I made myself be honest and do the math.
Yeah.
It came out to 4.075, hey, so really.
Okay.
4 either way. And it's just such a, there's filler here, and I can't, like, pretend there isn't filler here, but at the same time, none of them are bad. I don't dislike any of them.
Yeah.
And I think that the ones that I keep describing as filler is compared to them because they only seem like filler because they're on a record with such, like, some of the stuff that I love so much.
Yeah.
Brainwash, it was not my favorite for a long time, but I think when I started re-listening to this, like, on my own as a late teenager, early adulthood, when I started listening to that one, it became, like, the best one for me. And I've gone through, like, shifts and phases where, like, certain songs were, like, quote-unquote my favorite. And then gave another listen some years later, and I was like, actually, that one was really fire. Yes Sir, No Sir, the beginning of it, I think, is, like, pretty, like, it's not that interesting. The beginning is just what it is. It's a little bit silly. It's a little bit, like, whatever. But then, man, like, that little section that they have at around 220 is just it's just so hard-hitting, even though it's soft. Like, it just come so hard. There's just, oh, yeah, that's what she said. It's, there's just these little, like, moments that I keep rediscovering about certain songs, and I love that, like, I've never, in all the years, I've just never picked this up and gone, now I'm bored of it. And that, I think, is just what makes something worth doing a pod episode about, for sure. So, well, 4 stars for me.
And thank you for sharing. It's really, again, like, this is why I do the pod and I love it, is it's just an excuse for me to discover something cool and something new, and I definitely trust your guys' taste. So it's just a way for me to expand my brain in a non, like, psychedelic drugs way, and that's cool. I'm high on life.
Yeah, this is like 4 stars for me as well. This and Village Green are easily my two favorite Kinks albums. I waver between them. Usually Village Green wins out, but like, this has a lot of great tracks. It's just very dark. To put this on to drive to, by the time you hit Some Mother's Son, you're like, oh yeah, yeah, this is gonna be cool. And even the brighter stuff is definitely made in contrast to that darkness that runs through all of it. But Village Green has that too. These guys were like rebelling against some very like timely British ideas. Village Green is that pristine little town that doesn't exist. And this is patriotism, right? This is like empire and patriotism. And it's funny, I guess they ran it like, they became, I was just looking over like the Village Green, Rolling Stone did a Village Green at 50 article. One of the things that they were talking about in the beginning is that they ran into like problems with the Musicians Union in 66 in the US.
Oh, they did.
And basically had to withdraw into Englishness until 69, which like...
They were banned for a few years.
Yeah, they were banned. I remember that, yeah.
And that kind of makes sense in terms of like Village Green and this then, right? If your only audience are the British, then like what you're going to push back against are these like dying British like perfection ideals. And I think both albums work really well for that. And if I'm in the mood for the darker one, this is probably it. Because 3 songs deep, you're talking about your friend getting his brains blown out, or your son getting his brains blown out in like a trench somewhere. Okay, we're here for this.
If you would like a more upbeat version of that, I recommend Give the People What They Want, where they talk about watching JFK's brains blow out on television.
Nice. That's the next episode we'll do.
That's sure.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it's a 4-star album. For me. Yeah, this is great. Thanks for making me sit down and listen to it in earnest. Aubrey was a little weirded out when we were listening to it on our way to Colorado a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I think she was looking for a brighter song to open the weekend. But,
sorry.
In my head, it was like, oh, it's a great opportunity to sit down and listen to the whole album.
That's dark. Like, it's like dark lyrically.
But bright musically.
Yeah.
It's like,
Australia is very uplifting, and I hope that they have used that song in a tourism campaign at some point.
Like that was my thought in this, is was there a big push to move to Australia for British culture?
Dude, I think it was one of those like, they speak English and it's like far away and it's like sunny.
Well,
I don't know.
But also more importantly, it allows you to get out from under that like that society hierarchical system where it's like the US, right? Like we're less about what family, blah, blah, blah. Like that, I think that stuff still carries some weight in England in a way it just doesn't here, or Australia or Canada, you know what I mean? Like who you were born to really affects the rest of your life more than it should.
But it's kind of like the vibe I get from it is, again, like in that sarcastic tone. And it's not get away from the aristocracy. It's more, here's a beautiful, like, sunny area where you can still be as British as you want to be and not have to conform to those Americans. And you get to surf. It's a very,
I think, like, not to interrupt, I just think, I'm trying to think of an analog here to, like, in the United States in 2022. And maybe it's, like, Costa Rica or it's like Iceland, or I don't know. It's somewhere where there's a critical mass of people that speak English, and you can just get away. And with a lot of Americans, it also means you can get away with paying almost no taxes.
It says, all right, here's the lyrics. Australia, you get what you work for. Nobody has to be better than what they want to be. Australia, no class distinction. Australia, no drug addiction. I feel like that's not true anymore, if it ever was. Nobody's got a chip on their shoulder. We'll surf like they do in the USA. Yeah.
I think it was a place to get away and start another life. It's the same shit everyone believes all the time.
I love that it says, why not get a boat and come to Australia? No one is sailing a personal boat from England to Australia. That just isn't happening. Or if they do, they're not making it there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it also feels like they're selling Australia as suburbia, right?
Like, yeah.
But that's, yeah, I can see it. So it's almost like, maybe it's like California, or what California used to be for a lot of people. That's still the US, and we're going to go, but it's sunny, and the stars are there, and I don't know, whatever.
It's like Australia's the 1960s Bermuda or Bahamas, right?
Or Cuba before the revolution, or whatever. Yeah, one of those things. But it is upbeat. And I appreciate that. I think it works. It's a little bit of a sarcastic tone, and there's no doubt that there's a lot of music I like that has that tone. I think one of my favorite bands ever is Ween, and that's their tone with every single one of their songs that they sing, basically. Which is dark or weird or perverted or crazy-ass lyrics, and then a kind of upbeat sound. Okay, you guys want to take a break, and then we'll go into our... Or wait, whose turn is it next? It's Ryan's turn, right?
Yeah, it's my turn.
What are we going to do? Do you know?
Yeah, we're going to listen to the Meat Puppets 2.
Meat Puppets 2?
So, like, some of the tracks are going to sound familiar as Nirvana cover songs, songs that Nirvana covered, rather. But it's pretty different, pretty weird. How punk? Southwest punk from 1984. So, yeah.
I remember that you played one song off of that once, and I, like, said to Chris, I was like, listen to this. This is actually so much cooler than the Nirvana version.
Yeah, I feel like they're this weird intersection, and I don't know, maybe this is just a byproduct of where punk existed in the 1980s, where it's on the coast and not really, like, prominent in the middle of the country in terms of the connectedness of those scenes. But it's a lot of jammy kind of, I feel like there's some Grateful Dead in there, there's some Fuck You Dissonance in it, and then there's some really cool, different sounding stuff. I will say, if you have an issue with people singing off-key, this is going to be a rough one.
So we also, at some point, should talk about when, because the next schedule, 2 weeks from now, we will all be, presumably, at your wedding celebration.
Wow. Yeah, do we want to do a live one that weekend, maybe?
The wedding?
Yeah. No, Aubrey would love that, if we could just pod this thing. No, how long are you going to be in town, Zemo? Are you in on Friday and leaving on Sunday?
Here's the thing. So the flights to Albuquerque, because of balloon weekend, were absurd. And so we did what was actually a better option, which is that we got a direct from Pittsburgh to Denver on Thursday night. And we're actually going to drive down, which means Friday we're going to be driving down. And I don't know that I can necessarily guarantee full and cast availability on Friday.
I would say that's Friday's not going to work for me either. We're going to have the people coming into town.
Right. Ryan, is it's on Saturday? Or it's on Saturday, right?
Yeah, it's on Saturday.
Okay. And then, Jenny, you leave on Sunday, I take it?
I do.
Yeah.
Maybe let's just do it the weekend after. Like, too much to fit into one weekend.
I don't know. Maybe I can... You know what, Jenny? Maybe what we could do? Is we could just live stream with my phone and just criticize the wedding band as they're playing. I think we could just do that.
Lewis looks really thrilled with this
thing. Yeah, no, I'm gonna love that. There's nothing like spending money on a thing and then being reminded how it's not good at all. So yeah, if you could do that, that'd be amazing.
What are they gonna? Can you give us a preview of what they're gonna play?
It's mostly like some variation of like 50s, 60s, 70s. Yeah.
Do they take requests?
I do have a playlist of like songs that we requested that they play.
Oh, okay. Any reviews or anything?
I'm working on it. You could let me stall.
Sorry, do you want to vamp? Do I need to vamp? So yeah, we didn't, at my wedding, we did not have a band. We had a DJ, and he was instructed to play primarily old school hip hop, Run DMC and shit. But also, the first dance that we all danced out came out to was Blondie's Heart of Glass.
I have told Chris explicitly, if we ever get married, the only reason I would agree to it is because I would get to have the playlist for the entire day. And he was like, you gotta play some songs people can dance to. And I was like, watch me not.
The things that are on the playlist that I made, and I'm not sure all these made it, was like, Honky Cat, Elton John's already come.
Oh, Honky Cat. Okay.
Yeah. Boogie Oogie Oogie by Taste of Honey.
Boogie Oogie Oogie.
Hey Pocky Away by The Meters. Fly, Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again. Stevie Wonder, Signed and Sealed Delivered, right?
So you're going to R&B soul flavor a little bit.
Yeah. There was a lot of overlap in, that's what we figured for the reception back east and here. Like, as much as do a DJ, I'm not sure I'd enjoy that as much as just a live band playing.
No, I'm sure it'll be awesome. But when they fuck up, like, Marvin Gaye, like, I'm sure to be live streaming that.
I will say that the band back east, the original Moonlighters out of DC, one of the things that they gave us an option to play, is, I think you would recognize it, Alonzo. Yeah. It's Ronnie Laws, Friends and Strangers. So MF Doom sampled that, and it was on the list of songs to choose from. And so Ronnie Laws is this like 80s, like R&B.
Well, let's listen to it.
It is amazing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. That's cool. Wow. So they can play this?
They played this at the wedding party back east and absolutely killed it. And well, the band here didn't give that option, but they... The guys back east destroyed it. Like halfway through the evening, I was walking through with a drink in my hand, and they started playing this, and it's like, stop in your tracks. It was amazing.
Oh yeah, no, this is money.
Yeah, this is off of, like, MF Doom sampled this in Deep Fried Friends.
Yeah,
off of
Friends. Food. How many of us have them?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite songs on that record. I know we already did the Doom episode, but I think I like that record more than I like Mad Villain. Maybe.
I like the record's amazing. But like, the interesting beat tracks halfway through it are a little different. There's like a four cut of like just basically beat tracks.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's the hook.
Yeah, right, yeah. Oh, but this is a banger, man. Holy shit.
Dude, it's amazing. Yeah, dude, this whole album is really good for what this is. Yeah, this dude came out of Houston in like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, no, this is a straight banger. See, what I associate with this, for better or worse, is like 70s TV shows that were still playing in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like old prices, you know what I'm saying? That's the mental images that I have in my mind. Or like the $20,000 pyramid or some shit like that. This is money. Okay. So, Meat Puppets 2, will be in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah.
Possibly a drunk live stream, if I can get my shit together. In between then, at Ryan's wedding.
Got a gun for the